It was the early 1930s, and Korea had entered a dark time in its chapter. In the last 50 years, Korea had become a hotspot for war between China and Japan, eventually annexed in 1910. It would remain under Japan's empire for another 35 years and used to continue Japan's war efforts through the deportation of slave labor and women for prostitution. It was also a period where all things Korean were suppressed. During this time, to thrive, you would require to appear appreciative of Japanese culture, which explained how Lee Byung-chul, or B.C. Lee, ended up in Waseda University, Tokyo. B.C. Lee was part of the few Koreans who proved themselves smart, yet seemingly obedient enough to make it into Waseda and into the good graces of their Japanese occupiers. With fresh eyes, he wandered the streets of Tokyo in awe of what they've built. While the Japanese were cruel, B.C. probably couldn't deny what lies beyond their violent tendencies, an eerie truth that the Japanese were the only real Asians who could stand against the colonial West. Even China, a country with 500 million strong, fell into disarray and buckled under Western influence. But what probably impressed him the most was a large conglomerate named Mitsubishi that translates as the Three Diamonds. At that time, Mitsubishi was a zaibatsu, which loosely translates to financial clique, and is used to describe a family-run business empire. To BC, the zaibatsus revealed to him what business power really looks like: dynastic, financially dominant, with tendrils all around different sectors of power. But in the 1930s, the streets of Japan wasn't a safe place for an ambitious Korean. BC had to act the part that his occupiers assumed of him, as the obedient worker who could never run his own business. This overt suppression by the Japanese to stifle and belittle the Koreans was merely a desperate attempt to hide their fears of what Korea could become and what would happen to Japan's businesses should they decide to build their version of the zaibatsus. In March 1938, 8 years from now, BC would return to Korea after a whirlwind of events and set up a vegetable and dried fish shop in Daegu City. He would name it the Three Stars Shop, likely inspired by Mitsubishi's Three Diamonds, with all intention to become a dynastic empire. The Three Stars Shop, or in Korean, Samsung Sangho, would come to represent 20% of South Korea, the fourth largest economy in Asia. This is the dynastic story of Samsung, the empire that innovated, colluded, and led the war on technology against the likes of Sony, Apple, and Google. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 1 of a 5-part series, A Message in the Stars.
Samsung Electronics has broken another sales barrier boosted by record profits last
year. Samsung is a complex company whose influence runs deeper than many of us would think. The Samsung that we know has four main business units. The consumer electronics segment contributes 50% of the total revenue, with semiconductors at 30%, displays at 10%, and connected home systems making up the remainder. It's intriguing that Samsung, an innovation-oriented company, concentrates on hardware as the world increasingly embraces software and connected systems. We'll delve deeper into the reasons behind Samsung's apparent software lag, which involves a struggle with Google that elevated Sundar Pichai's status, now serving as Google's CEO. But Samsung isn't just four business units. If you zoom in, it has over 250 subsidiaries and joint ventures. And if you zoom out, Samsung gets significantly larger than we know. Beyond the borders of the United States, it has affiliated companies that span another four categories: electronics, machinery as in construction, financial services, and many others that range from an advertising company to a resort. The combination of these four categories have a far-reaching impact that represents more than 20% of Korea's GDP. In fact, Samsung's overseas influence through the four categories can make countries reliant, in particular, Vietnam, which is Samsung's largest overseas production base. Scattered across over 10 provinces, some 30 factories account for close to 30% of Vietnam's GDP. But not all Samsung's investment is strategic. Some are emotional, perhaps too emotional. Because the late Samsung chairman Lee was a dog lover, Samsung had been supporting Crufts, the UK's largest dog show, located some 9,000 kilometers or 5,500 miles from Seoul. This would be a recurring theme, whereby the Lee family's interests can sway the company into a wide variety of investments that seem to benefit few people other than the Lees themselves. Today, the bloodline is still carried on by Jay Lee, who, like his grandfather, would continue the tradition of betrayal and political collusion, but also genuine hard work that started many years ago in 1910 when his grandfather, BC, was born. BC was born on 12th February 1910 in Uryong, South Gyeongsang, as the youngest son of four siblings. Their family was educated, mostly driven by his grandfather, who set the family's future ahead through his successful business endeavors. While BC would adopt his grandfather's business intuition, his patriotism would come from his dad, who actively funded the independence movement against the Japanese occupation. Despite their opposition, they managed to maintain a smart facade around the Japanese, gaining favor and revealing to BC how relationships could be played. Eye power, or nunchi, is what the Koreans would call it, the subtle art of situational awareness. Born in a time where playing outside seemed deadly, he quickly understood that he best work hard or risk deportation as an uneducated slave laborer. As such, he would spend his childhood memorizing classics such as The Sayings of Confucius, which would come to influence the way he runs Samsung. In April 1930, he entered Waseda University, Tokyo, to study political science and economics. It would seem that everything was well planned. Ideally, he would graduate in 3 years, then strategically work with the Japanese to bring glory back to Korea. But BC would fall sick with beriberi, a forgotten disease caused by a lack of vitamin B1. Victims of beriberi will experience muscular paralysis and, in severe cases, heart failure. Forced to drop out of school and to return to Korea, BC, who was still undefeated, thought, "Maybe I'll start a company instead." The 8 years that led to the 1938 establishment of Samsung was profound. He had established a rice mill with his friends, believing that a staple, such as rice, could never go out of fashion. But by the mid-1930s, the Great Depression was in full swing, which crippled much of the industrial world and almost drove them to bankruptcy. The turnaround journey was brutal, but taught them that a company with limited product lines is never immune to the winds of change. In order to ensure they would last a long time, their company must be able to weather the economic cycles, which was why he began to expand into different verticals. By 1939, he reportedly owned a transportation business with 20 trucks, 1,600 football fields of land, a brewery, and of course his new general store named Samsung Sangho. All was going well. His strategy of building a diversified conglomerate within Korea had enabled them to weather all sorts of storms, even World War II. In 1947, he even owned a local university and newspaper. Likely feeling reassured, he decided to expand beyond Korea and paid a visit to Tokyo, Japan. BC could not believe it. He had heard about the reports that Tokyo was burned to the ground 2 years ago, but to see it in real life was humbling. "Hardly the Tokyo that I remember," he might have thought, as he passed by rows of makeshift shops around him. Oddly, he had wanted to cut his hair in Tokyo, so hurried into the first barber that he could find.
Hi.
A middle-aged man greeted him.
Take a seat.
BC sat on a plastic stool facing a yellow mirror. The barbershop wasn't fancy, but against the backdrop of Tokyo, it might seem a little upmarket.
Just follow the shape of my head.
BC gestured with his hands circling around. The barber panned left, then right, carefully cutting his overgrown sideburns to ensure symmetry.
I think we should cut this area a little more. It'll better fit your head.
BC nodded in reply, realizing that the barber was very meticulous. He might have even suggested a few more changes with a smile, before kindly accepting BC's money with a deep bow in gratitude. This moment would etch in BC's mind as he realized that the Japanese, who he assumed to be downtrodden, decided to calmly live on with their life. Throughout his trip, he would admire the Japanese people's resilience and realize that global success was to come to Japan. He could not rest on his laurels. Admittedly, the trip to Japan wasn't just for a haircut. He had wanted to learn the business dynamics of the Zaibatsus and realized that they were dismantled by the Allied forces. In its place were the Keiretsus, new companies that weren't run by a family, but by a collective of shareholders. These shareholders form a business network, typically centered around a private bank, to secure funding as they cross-deal with each other. Keiretsus would have seeded in BC the ideal structure for Samsung that would eventually be a frustration to South Korea's authorities today. You see, the Lee family maintains control over the company through a complex web of cross-shareholdings that also mitigates inheritance tax. In South Korea, the maximum inheritance tax for an empire like Samsung is around 50%. A huge loss of wealth should they play by the book. But back in 1947, tax was hardly on BC's mind. Instead, he was excited. His business trip had been a success, so it was time to return to Korea. By the early 1950s, things had gone exceedingly well for a few Korean entrepreneurs. So much so that they established a guild and invited the American military to deal with them. The guild would meet every week, and in BC's words, deeply reflect about what it means to live as a human. A thoughtful question that on June 25th, 1950, every Korean would be forced to answer. Korean Civil War had begun.
On Sunday, June 25th, communist forces attacked the Republic of Korea. This attack has made it clear beyond all...
Outside of BC's house, he could hear the abrasive sounds of trucks racing across the streets, followed by clapping and cheering all around. The South Koreans were optimistic that their men could push North Korea back to where they came from. Perhaps BC was equally optimistic, until... he was awoken from his sleep. It was midnight, and a thunderous sound had sent shockwaves in his house. Peeking outside, he noticed a huge tank some distance away. It was firing straight towards the south.
Odd.
He might have thought that a South Korean tank was firing southwards, until he realized that its turret was flying the North Korean flag. To his horror, he realized that the enemy had crossed further south. They were now in Seoul. Over the next few weeks, BC and his family would observe firsthand what civil war could really do to the nation. North Korean soldiers and local militia would break into warehouses, including theirs, and loot whatever remained. BC would even spot a communist chief riding in a late model American-made Chevrolet that was formerly owned by BC himself. By September 1950, having witnessed public executions, BC sold whatever remained of Samsung to purchase 5 trucks to evacuate Samsung employees and their families as the communist forces pushed further south. Initially stopping at Daegu, they eventually landed in Busan, the last remaining South Korean stronghold at the southern tip of Korea. It was here that Western forces provided the firepower needed that drove the North Koreans all the way back. Across the three-year war, Seoul was captured and recaptured at least four times, and it led to the deaths of about 3 million Koreans, purportedly more than the number of Koreans who died during World War II. By July 1953, a ceasefire was signed, and BC's family would come out of hiding to return to Seoul, ready to conquer South Korea. It's the morning of May 1961, and BC was pacing around the patio in Hotel Okura, a well-known five-star luxury hotel in Tokyo. He scoffed.
I'm the richest man in Korea, and yet I'm nobody.
In the years since the Korean War, Samsung had evolved into a holding company that mirrored the Keiretsu's in Japan. Far and expansive, BC's success so far was a mixture of relationships and business savvy. Knowing full well that Korean families were torn apart and left destitute, flavoring and taste became something of a luxury that the common people crave in order to escape their current predicament. A profitable solution was import substitution, a process of importing cheap raw products and refining them on Korean soil. But back then, the import substitution license was difficult to get unless he could somehow get to Syngman Rhee, South Korea's first president. Luckily, BC's late father, Lee Chan-woo's financial involvement during the independence movement had not gone unnoticed. It also helped that Rhee had known his father very briefly when they were teenagers. By tapping on his father's connections, he quickly convinced Rhee that he had the historic capability in running a factory, but more importantly, in transporting goods. If awarded the import substitution license, he could also cover distribution. In 1953, Chiel Jedang, or CJ, which loosely translates to First Sugar, was born. Spurred by the success of his sugar plant, he was then allowed to set up a textile plant with Japan and German aid. With the new cash flow, he acquired a bank in 1957, then an insurance company in 1958. Using leverage from the banks, he then bought a department store and a Confucian university. To many, he was becoming the most powerful man in South Korea, a privilege that he was scared to lose. So he began adopting a darker approach to threat, and in one instance, had his opposition jailed for corruption. But now, the very power that he has is the reason why his life was at stake. You see, the past President Rhee had fallen to a military coup, one that would define South Korea even till today, led by a man named General Park Chung-hee. General Park's family were educated but poor, a profound experience that made General Park disdain mediocrity. He grew up admiring Napoleon, eventually joining the Japanese Imperial Army when Korea was still under occupation. He served them well, rose to lieutenant, and was stationed in Manchuria, where he observed the trading influence that the Zaibatsus had. In his opinion, their excessive aggregation of wealth had hurt national interests, and yet they were undeniably capable at driving developments. He probably thought that they were the necessary evils needed to push a country forward, if only he could get a leash over their neck. After the war, his expertise was pivotal in growing Korea's military might, and by 1958, he was made general. Throughout his ascent, he had observed the then President Rhee award contracts on relationships and create a corrupt society that birthed the Chaebols, Korea's version of the Zaibatsus. With the same disdain and disgust, he gathered his forces and took control of the government, then shifted his attention to the business tycoons. It was why BC was left feeling sick in Hotel Okura. He knew that of all the business tycoons in Korea, he must be at the top of the list, a title that he used to wear with pride.
Lee-san, two people were looking for you. As instructed, I said you weren't in, but they left a letter.
A voice came from beyond his door.
Sure, I'm coming.
BC dropped the letter on the floor and packed his things hurriedly. When he established Samsung, the Three Stars shop, he had hoped that it symbolized the big, the many, and the strong. It was his message to the rest of the world that they would grow as large as the Zaibatsus that controlled Japan. But General Park had read the message differently and wrote a letter directly to BC Lee that his business colleagues were already in jail. And now, like many others, he had to fly back to Seoul to bargain for his life. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 1 of a 5-part series, A Message in the Stars. Next, in Empires, we'll learn about the pivotal deal that Park Chun-hee made with BC that birthed the modern-day Samsung, and the fallout that reshaped the Lee Empire. Follow us so you won't miss out on episode 2 of our 5-part series, Fracturing the Celestial Body. Empires is a 1UP Media original, produced and edited by Gwang Jin, audio experience by Ethan Sam, and narrated by Peter Ng. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.